Chapter 3. Letters Home. London, 7 a.m., Tuesday, May 9th, 1972. Dear Sharon, everyone's trying to convince me that it's 7 a.m. The sun is out, everyone is shouting and eating breakfast, but they can't fool me. It's 1 a.m. San Diego time. I'm terribly tired. I can't eat breakfast because I just ate supper 2 hours ago. I'm actually enjoying my situation, though. Mataji is really nice and very protective. She has made this trip often and is looking after me like a hawk. She actually ran up and down 3 flights of stairs searching for me in JFK Airport. I've eaten all the food you packed, but for one Tangelo. Sorry to have awakened you so early in the morning when I called on arriving in London. My thoughts are with you all the time, and I love you very much. My feeling of love is intensified, or I'm becoming more conscious of it, as the distance between us increases. I don't know what kind of strange situation I'm getting myself into. I'll have to wait and see. Love, Sam. Bombay, 6 a.m., Thursday, May 11th. My dearest love, it is now 6 in the morning and my sleeping cycle has changed. I had a fairly good rest after a hectic day's shopping in Bombay yesterday. I miss you and want you not to worry about me. My thoughts are with you always. The trip was fairly smooth, although 29 hours in the air gets a bit old and tiring. We traveled from New York to Bombay in a large 747, and I could sleep comfortably any time by lying across 4 seats. After much internal questioning about why the trip, should I be here, and is Baba real, what will happen, etc., etc., we arrived in Bombay at 3 a.m., 12 and a half hours difference from San Diego time. It was hot, humid, and very uncomfortable upon stepping outside the plane. My first and continuing impression is that I dislike Bombay and have a strong desire to return, but for Baba. The airport was dirty and dingy, uncomfortable and barren. Bare walls, dirty with smears and handprint marks. Primitive facilities, overcrowded with skinny, protein-deficient, ill-looking people. I was tired and sweaty and dazed and felt the potential for malaria, hepatitis, Su Gong Fu fever, and any other illness existing. I didn't want to touch anything. I got my bags and was pleasantly surprised to see that nothing was stolen, and I still had my money. After passing through customs and a crowd of people with a number of them begging for money and some wanting to make illegal exchange of it, we entered an old 1942-looking taxi and headed for the city. Some of my impressions. 2 small mosquitoes in the car, and I pray for health. Rickety roads. Cab driver turning off his lights to save battery power, then coughing. I move away from cab driver and again pray for health. Skinny, emaciated people sleeping on the road, limbs twisted this way and that, hot, hot, humid, oppressive, wandering dogs and cattle, a man broken and bent, washing himself at the side of the road in waste water. My spirits were low and I was tired. I settled at the West End Hotel in Bombay and will stay here 2 or 3 days as we learn Baba is coming to Bombay to greet people in a ceremony at a large stadium here. Thank God my room is air-conditioned and I am comfortable in it. The first day here, I went shopping and my spirits were further lowered. The city is crowded and dirty and the people look malnourished. The rich and comfortable say, these people are paying for their sins. I don't know. I don't think this way. But who knows? Maybe Baba can show me. Leaving the hotel the first day to go sightseeing, I was concretely struck with a cultural shock. I could feel myself dazed and unsteady after the long trip and the vast change in setting. The sun was bright, hot, glaring. A myriad of smells, sounds, movements, and activities made me reel and sway. All kinds of smells. Incense, dung, food cooking, people and animals. Cows and dogs and monkeys were about, with people moving this way and that in all directions, confusing, overpopulated. Sights and sounds of every dimension gave a kaleidoscopic impression, and I felt that all my senses were being bombarded. Jingle, jangle, tinkle, tankle, smelling here, smelling there, glaring sun, reflections off windows, a monkey jumping, a dog here, a cow there, people staring at me from all over, tipsy and a bit giddy. I enjoyed letting myself float with the experience, engrossed with the sensory challenge. I almost bumped into a cow as I wandered across, dazed, looking at everyone, and I soon realized that I wasn't the only one sightseeing. There I was dressed in full Western regalia, looking as totally out of place as a creature from another planet. Early in the day, Mataji picked me up by cab, and we ate at the house of people involved in planning the program which Baba will attend at the stadium. They were influential people. One, a wealthy industrialist by the name of Kamani. Another, a tall, friendly Norwegian man named Alf Tiedemann. I understand he is the focus of a chapter in Man of Miracles, the book by Howard Merford. When I questioned him about his first meeting with Baba, he said that it would take too long to tell and referred me to chapter 16. Maybe later, if we have more time together, I can get his personal account. He actually was extremely nice, helpful and caring, and said things about Baba and life in general which raised my spirits. It's strange that when my spirits become low and I begin to feel I'm chasing some meaningless dream, if I talk to a devotee of Baba, my spirits are lifted. I don't know whether it's the exuberance they all share or what, but something genuine and electrifying comes across and immediately uplifts me. There is a strange similarity of feeling and expression communicated by people who have contacted Baba, as if they are all experiencing some common vibration which they are able to reflect. To me, this is a very optimistic sign. My feelings vacillate from pessimism to elation, and I can almost sense that something is about to happen to me. Something very important, something central to my life and to your life, to our lives, my dearest, dearest love. You also are always with me. Love, Sam. Bombay, Friday, May 12th. Dear Sharon, today we'll be busy. A friend of Mataji has made an appointment for me for a reading from the Book of Bregu. This is my first experience with such a situation, and I'm excited. I hadn't known, but the Book of Bregu is a very respected spiritual manuscript with quite a reputation. It was supposedly written 7,000 years ago by someone at a higher level of consciousness with access to other dimensions of reality. Everyone's life is supposed to be written in this book. A real mind-blower to a scientific man, and of course, if it were true, quite a blow to our Western conceptualizations of time and reality. What's just as unusual is the way the reader picks the page or chapter to be read. He measures your shadow any time of the day you come. Nothing more specific than that. He makes a calculation in some mysterious way from his shadow reading, and then comes up with the correct page. Think of the forces necessary to accomplish this phenomenal feat. From what could seem to be such a simple, haphazard procedure, I certainly would have to be shown a great deal from the readings to believe them. Not just vague generalities, but specific, unknowable facts. Still, I am assured by Mataji that this is exactly what happened to her. The accurate telling of many unusual facts about her past and present, as well as specifics about her future. I understand that Sai Baba has said that past, present, and future are the same, and that it is only because of our human condition that we see only a small section called the present. Perhaps, if I have some exciting experience with the Book of Bregu, my feelings about time may change. Who knows? Sai Baba is coming to the ceremony today, and I'll have the good fortune of going with one of the people responsible for setting up the function. I don't expect to see him at close range, though, since thousands of people will be there. Mataji has already gone to Bangalore, a mountain town 450 miles southeast of here, and I'll meet her there in a few days. Baba's summer residence, Vrindavan, where he is conducting a summer course for college students, is located just outside of Bangalore. I have been thinking about you and the family frequently, if not always. I feel your presence with me and kiss each of you warmly. Please don't worry about me. I'm okay, although a bit lonely. Love, Sam. Chapter 4. First Meeting. My first meeting with Sai Baba, as unusual as it turned out to be, was to prove fairly typical of all those that would follow. After landing in Bombay, we learned that Baba was to appear at a stadium there, and then would return to his summer residence near Bangalore. I decided to see this religious leader at the stadium. How would he present himself, and what would transpire between him and such a large crowd? The morning of his appearance, I was invited by one of Baba's devotees for lunch at her apartment somewhere on the outskirts of Bombay. She gave me directions to the stadium and left early to get a good seat. I could rest a while and leave later in the day, as I was still tired from the long trip. Now, Bombay is a city of some 6 million people. I was in a small apartment, lost somewhere in this sprawling metropolis, quite a distance from the stadium. Baba was going to present himself at 6 o'clock. At about 5:30, I walked out to catch a taxi to the stadium. As I was leaving the building, I noticed some people rolling out a tattered little red rug and placing flowers over the entrance. I stopped and asked what this meant. The answer, given casually to this Westerner who couldn't be expected to comprehend its significance, produced an eerie sensation, similar to that of déjà vu. And the longer I thought about it, the more my confusion grew. Who but Sai Baba himself was expected at this very building to visit a devotee, someone on the 9th floor whom I did not know? What an extraordinary coincidence. But then, again, highly unlikely. Wishful thinking, surely. There were a handful of people here, rolling a tattered red rug out on the ground, and tens of thousands waiting somewhere in a stadium. How foolish even to consider the possibility of Baba's making an appearance here. By this time, however, I was open enough to consider something possible in a culture so unlike my own, and decided to wait around just to see what would happen. I was directed to the apartment on the 9th floor, and a small group of mostly older people and their younger children, no young adults, and no one from my culture. I was reassured by a man standing at the door that Baba was indeed coming. The lady of the house had told him so, and we should just wait patiently. A glance at my watch informed me that in 15 minutes Baba was to present himself at the stadium. How crazy I was getting to believe he was actually coming here. Purely wishful thinking on the part of these people. This was probably how all the stories of Sai Baba got started. To think he would show up just when I was walking out, in the very place in all of Bombay where I happened to be, minutes before he was supposed to appear at the stadium, what foolishness! I descended the 9 flights of stairs and walked toward a taxi, then stood there, wavering between going and staying. My better judgment was to go to the stadium. Baba was to be there in about 10 minutes now, but wouldn't it be nice to see him here, up close, without the clamor and confusion of a large crowd? Sam, strange things are happening to you, I thought, to be tempted by such an unlikely occurrence. Yet, As I was about to step into the taxi, a white car passed within 3 feet, and I saw the characteristic orange robe and bushy hairstyle and knew that Sai Baba was indeed going to visit that apartment. Before I knew it, I was running after the car like a madman. I stopped myself almost in mid-flight. Here I was, beginning to act like a religious fanatic. I had to remind myself that I didn't believe much in Sai Baba. Although this was an unusual coincidence, I should proceed at a more leisurely pace and not let the situation go to my head, overwhelm my senses. I rode an elevator back to the 9th floor and found that Baba was in the back room, with everyone silently awaiting his reappearance. Some devotees had told me that upon first meeting him, they knew Baba to be divine. And I had heard of people falling into a swoon or experiencing other dramatic emotional reactions when coming face to face with him for the first time. I waited expectantly, and then out he came, graceful, smiling, radiant, nodding to all present, appearing extremely confident, a man with great presence and control, very fluid and graceful in movement. He was slender and just over 5 feet tall. I wasn't struck with any overwhelming emotional reaction and really didn't think him particularly unusual. I had seen artists and entertainers and indeed my own teachers and professors show as much confidence and command as much respect. Nevertheless, people pressed to get closer to touch his feet, embarrassed at the thought of participating in this kind of display. I shrank to the edge of the crowd and watched. He approached one man, looked into his eyes, and spoke something, and then off he ran to the elevator. The visit had lasted no more than a couple of minutes. On the way to the stadium, I reflected on the probability of such a chance meeting. I was sure that had this happened to a devotee, it would soon become an example of Baba's control over the direction of people's lives. For an individual who still believed in coincidences, however, that's all it was, unusual though it might have been. I arrived at the stadium too late to get in and had to content myself with observing through a gate. Far in the distance, making a slow, circular gesture with his hand, palm up, raising it slowly in a gesture directing attention heavenward, was Baba. I watched him for a moment, and then he began to walk slowly in my direction. His face reflected gentle compassion and love, and an unusual inner gaze, an expression seeming to mirror his being both in this world and in another. I felt that he radiated some sort of inner rhythm, as if the chanting of bhajans by the crowd actually originated within himself. People reached out to touch his feet. He stepped back gently, motioning for them to stop. I saw the intensity of man's deepest desires and innermost needs reflected in the pleading, searching eyes of the crowd, arms and hands outstretched desperately for contact. Then, without noticing me at all, he turned and walked back some 100 yards away. This chapter ends with 2 quotations from Satya Sai Baba. First, to a worldly man, a God intoxicated person will appear mad, and he will laugh at him for it. But to the God-intoxicated man, the worldly appear insane, foolish, misled, blind. Of all the insanities that harass man, God-madness is the least harmful, the most beneficial. Second quotation. The Lord has to come in human form and move about among men so that he can be listened to, contacted, loved, revered, and obeyed. He has to speak the language of men and behave like human beings as a member of the species. Otherwise, he will be either negated and neglected or feared and avoided.